morning we started studying in the book of 2 Timothy chapter 4, and we looked at Paul's disappointment in the people that he had been near and dear to who had fallen away when he was at the end of his life and he was in a Roman prison about to be executed. And we saw that he had a need to have others close to him in that time. He wanted the brethren who were still faithful to be there with him to encourage him and to help him while he was going through that. And as we said this morning, tonight's lesson, we're going to back up a little bit in the chapter, but we're going to talk about how he actually felt about his upcoming death, which he knew was imminent. He knew it was going to happen. Previously, we said that he was in prison twice in Rome. The first time he was able to leave his imprisonment after he stood before Caesar and was tried by him, he was released and able to travel some and write letters and outside of prison and work. And he knew that that was going to happen, or that he was pretty sure that was going to happen when he wrote the Philippians in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 23, a passage we mentioned this morning but we didn't read. But for this evening, it's certainly applicable also, and we will read that, Philippians 1 and verse 23, which he says, "For I am hard pressed between the two," and the two that he's talking about goes back to verse 21, "to live as Christ and to die as gain." So to live or to die, it says he's hard pressed between the two, "having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better." But then you drop down to verse 25 and it says, "And being confident of this, I know that I shall remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy of faith." So he had confidence that he wasn't going to die now, that he was going to be able to continue on with them for at least a time, and he would be able to produce good works while he was still there among them. But this time, when he's writing his letter, the second letter to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4, he knew that his time was up. He knew that this time he was just waiting in this dungeon for the handing down of the day he would be executed. And so as he is there in chapter 4, verses 6 through 8, as he has this opportunity not only to teach Timothy, which he's been doing, he tells him to keep preaching, to preach the word, to be ready, all of those things in this chapter. And then even throughout the book, he gives him pointers, teachings, commandments, whatever it is you want to call them, and different things throughout the book, telling Timothy what he needs to do as a preacher and how he needs to stand up for the faith and to encourage and help the brethren to be faithful. But then in verses 6 through 8, he pours out his heart to Timothy and lets him know that he realizes his death is imminent. He says, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all those who loved his appearing." And that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to look at this passage, and we're going to see the way that Paul viewed death. And it's kind of fascinating when you read how Paul viewed death, not only in this passage, but in other passages, and how death is portrayed in the Bible. It's oftentimes different than many people here on this earth look at death. And we're going to see how Paul viewed it, learn from the confidence that he had in his life, knowing that there was something better that awaited him, and realize that we can have that same confidence as Christians. We should view death in the same way that Paul did. And once we view death in that way, then we can have the same kind of confidence that if he did die, it would be far greater, far better than what he it was experiencing in this life. So let's look at what it says, going down step by step about what he says. And he says, first of all, in verse 6, of course, his death is imminent. "I am already being poured out as a drink offering." But notice what he says about his death, and the time of my departure is at hand. So he views death as a departure. Most people don't think of it that way. Departing. You know, we're going to be departing in the morning, going to Albuquerque. We're going to be leaving this area and going there. And we're going to be departing here in a little while from this church building, and we're going to be going to our homes or wherever it is that we're going tonight. That's what we're a departure is. We understand that. Well, Paul, when he's talking about his death, views it in that way, as simply leaving one place and going somewhere else. And when he thought about that, he realized that the body which he was dwelling in is just simply a temporary dwelling place. And that's something that he told the Corinthians when he wrote them in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. He let them know this same idea that death, this body that you're in, this earthly house, as he says it is in chapter 5 verse 1, and then he calls it a tent. And he says, that's going to be destroyed. The earthly body is not going to continue to stand. This tent will be destroyed. And the fact is, according to verse 2 of chapter 5, that we are earnestly desiring to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven. We want that spiritual body. That's what we are awaiting. That's what we're working toward. And in fact, it says in verse 2 that we groan for that spiritual body. And so in verse 4, for we who are in this tent groan, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, but further clothed, that mortality may be swallowed up in life. So we want, again, something better. We want this spiritual body that awaits us. And, you know, as we are thinking about that, and the fact that these bodies that we're in are just simply temporary dwelling places, something that we will be leaving someday. When we think about that, we realize, and all of us here know that this is true, that our bodies will break down. As we get older, maybe even some people before they get very old, their bodies may start to break down. They get some kind of disease that starts to affect their body. It starts to break down. But eventually, whether you're diseased or not, that's going to happen. That's the fate of all of us. And we can see that in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And I want us to look over there. And we're not going to look at all the figures that are given in this chapter. But we are going to look at a few of them. The ones at the beginning of this section in chapter 12, we're going to look at a few of those, the symbolism that's given in this book. But we start reading in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 1. It says, "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come." So he's contrasting the days of your youth, when you need to remember God, but then at some point in time, he says, the difficult days will come. It says, "And the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them." So your life isn't as joyful as it might have been when one was younger. "While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain." So we're going to look at the symbolism that's given here in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, beginning in verse 3, at just a few of the things that's mentioned here. The first one it talks about, as we begin reading verse 3, it says, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble. The keepers of the house would be talking about your arms and your hands. And we all understand that a lot of people, as they grow older, they may start to shake. My grandpa did that. And of course, we have kind of a condition, and I have it. You've probably noticed that I shake. I shake all the time, pretty much. Not as bad now as it was when I was even younger than now, but it's going to get worse when I get older. And he just sat there and shook all the time. And that's what people who grow older often do. And that's the idea. The keepers of the house, your arms and your hands start to shake as one gets older. And then we see the next illustration that's given here is, "And the strong men bow down." Of course, with the human body, the strong men, that would be reference to the legs. The legs keep you upright. They are strong. They support you. And yet, as one gets older, the legs become more feeble. And we understand that as people get older, sometimes they have to use walkers, sometimes they have to use canes. Maybe they just have to go slowly as they walk. They can't go quickly like they used to. They can't. When they were younger, they may could have run and jump, and they can't do that anymore. Their legs become feeble. Then we see, after it talks about the legs, the strong men bow down when the grinders cease, because they are few. And the grinder ceasing would be the teeth. And we understand as people get older, sometimes their teeth begin rotting, they break off, sometimes they lose them completely. We have maybe better means in our day and age than some than in the past ages as to taking care of our teeth and making sure that they stay healthier than some. But even if we take care of our teeth very well, that doesn't mean that as we get older, they're not going to get brittle and break and not work the way that they had before. Teeth are lost and become less effective. And then the next one that's mentioned, and the last one that we'll talk about, and again, there's more, but these are just a few of them. And those that look through the windows grow dim in verse 3. Well, what's that? That's losing the eyesight. Looking through the window, being able to see. You know, as people get older, maybe they haven't worn glasses their whole life, but then they have to start wearing glasses, or maybe they have to start wearing reading glasses. Some people lose their sight altogether. They're not able to see at all anymore. But the point is that as one gets older, our bodies start breaking down. Our bodies don't work like they used to. And that's because it was designed that way. Our bodies were not designed to last forever. Our bodies were not designed to stay strong and problem-free. Our bodies were designed to break down so that eventually what happens to our bodies? Our body dies. And yet when Paul thought about that as far as death was concerned, he looked at it again as simply leaving and going somewhere else, because he knew the true words, "For dust you are, and to dust you shall return." And that's true for everyone. Our bodies came from the ground, our bodies will return to the ground. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 44 says, "It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body and there is a spiritual body." Now in this natural body that we're talking about, the natural body that will eventually grow old and die, when we are on earth, that's where our soul is. Our soul is inside this earthly body. Once the earthly body passes, then the body's not good anymore to hold the soul. So we have to depart the earthly body, the natural body, and go to the spiritual body. And that's what Paul saw it as. That's all death is. All death is I leave this imperfect body, which oftentimes may cause me pain, which can get sick, which can cause suffering. And then I'm going to be able to leave this imperfect body and go to a perfect spiritual body where there will be no more pain and suffering for those of us who are Christians. That was confidence that Paul had. Now remember, we talked this morning about Paul, where Paul was. Paul was in a dungeon. And Paul was in chains. And Paul was suffering. He was in pain. And so he could realize, once I'm out of this body, it's a departure. I'm just leaving. And I'll be far better off. That's how we need to view death. As a departure. As our spirits leaving and going elsewhere. And you know, for Christians, where is it that that is? Well, if our bodies, when our bodies die and our spirits leave our physical bodies, and we obtain that spiritual body, for Christians, we'll be going home to our true home. This world is not our home. We sing that song, we have that truth. We're pilgrims, we're sojourners in this world. When we die, we will be leaving and we will be going home. And that should give us confidence and that should give us strength to press on in this world. And no matter what happens here, we'll be better off for eternity. Paul was confident in that. And we need to have that same confidence. Now, as we continue on in our text, back to 2 Timothy chapter 4, after he says that the time of my departure is at hand, he said that he has fought the good fight. And he understands that the fight that he was in was not a physical fight, that it was a spiritual fight. It was a fight that where he was against the devil and against the spiritual forces that the devil would throw at him. Ephesians 6 talks about there being principalities and powers and rulers of the darkness of this age, which we are fighting against, where Satan and his angels are certainly behind this evil, and Christians must deal with him and with the things that he throws at us. And yet Paul was confident that he had fought a good fight. As he fought against these spiritual forces, that he had done so in a positive way, in a good way to help himself and certainly to help others also. Now, when we think about what Paul's fight was as he fought this spiritual battle, the kind of evil practices that he fought against, and, you know, again, when you look through Paul's life in the book of Acts and as he's writing the letters and he makes mention of some of the things that he's fighting against, he fought against paganism. He fought against Judaizing teachers. He fought against unbelieving Jews. He fought against his own fleshly weaknesses. He had all of these things against him, which he had to stand up and again make the decision to stay faithful. The threat of prison didn't matter. The threat of death didn't matter. He was going to do it anyway. But he fought against all these things and he realized his fight was a good fight. And that's what I want us to understand. He was confident in his fight. You know, we fight against the same kinds of forces when we think about it. And maybe they're different in some ways that we deal with in him, but you know, we fight against evolutionists, people who believe in the fact that God did not create the world. We fight against other false teachers. You go into the world, how many people are going to teach something different than what the New Testament teaches? They're going to teach their opinions, their doctrines, their ideas. We have to fight against that. We in the church have to fight against the liberal tendencies in the church. We have to fight against the ones who are taking things and doing things that aren't authorized in the New Testament. We have to stand up against that and fight against that and stay divided from them because of that. We have to fight against atheism. We have to fight against our own human weaknesses. We all have human weaknesses. We have to battle every day. We all have these temptations that come upon us. And we have to say that I'm not going to succumb to that. You know, we are tempted to give in to things day by day, and we must make ourselves fight against that. Well, at the end of our life, are we going to be able to say the same thing, that we fought a good fight? In fact, the end of our life may be right now. So can we in our minds, can we say, I have fought a good fight, as Paul did? He was confident. That's what I want us to understand. I want us to understand that he knew that he had done what he could against Satan and against the forces of evil that were coming. We have to make sure that our fight is a good fight. Paul was also confident, back in our text, that he had finished the race. Now in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 7, it says, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race. When he says that he has finished the race, and as Paul ran this race, and it's the race of life that we all run, and we all have our own, but the race has many obstacles. You go through Paul's life and you see the obstacles that he faced from place to place where he went. As he traveled on these journeys, for example, And we see that he goes to Ephesus and he goes to Corinth. And everywhere he goes, there's obstacles that he has to face. And there's stumbling blocks that are thrown in front of him. So he has to jump over those and avoid those and do what he can to keep running the race. But he says he had finished the race. He didn't quit the race. He didn't say, oh, this race is too hard. I've got to quit. No, Paul did not give up. And that's what he tells them when he writes them from his prison cell. Now remember in Philippians 3 verses 13 through 14, when he is writing this, he's writing it from his rented house, which is a prison, being chained to a Roman guard. So this is his first imprisonment when he writes this letter. But this is what he says in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 13. He says, "Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." At this time, he realized that he was pressing on, that he was running that race. He was running it faithfully. He was pressing toward the goal. And then what we just read in Timothy is that it had finished it. Because he knew his death was imminent, as we said. So he got through this race. You know, Paul could have very easily run a while and quit. Remember Demas we talked about this morning? That's what Demas did. The ones who were Christians in Asia that we talked about this morning that left Paul, that's what they did. They ran for a while and then they quit when they didn't want to run anymore. And Paul, through all his tribulations and trials, did not quit. He continued running through good times and through bad times. I'm not much of an obstacle runner, or a race runner, you could say. As far as when I was a kid, I didn't do that much. But in high school, I ran cross country. For some reason or another, I got talked into running cross country. So running those races, I remember halfway through, maybe even before that, you start hurting so bad in your side, and you just want to quit. And you see a huge hill in front of you. And you say, I don't want to run up that hill. And you want to just stop, or at least you want to stop and walk for a while. But you can't do that in a race. You've got to keep running, keep moving forward. And, you know, as far as the Christian race and Paul's race, he didn't have to worry about whether people were passing him or not. He just had to keep running. He just had to finish it. And that's what we have to understand, is this race that we are in, as we are running this race, it must be one that we finish. We can't go for a little while and then say, well, I'm going to stop and sit down for a little bit. Or I'm going to say, that's it, I've run far enough. I've gotten halfway through and that's good enough. We can't do that. We have to keep running it till we finish it. And the fact of the matter is that we're going to be happy when we reach the end. When we are able to persevere all the way to the end, this is going to bring joy to us. Look with me in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 36. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 36. "For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise." That's the reward, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. But it's worth it. It's worth the endurance. It's worth pressing on. It's worth persevering. You know, one thing about Paul, as far as his race that he's running was concerned, Paul didn't start as early as others might have started. Remember what Paul did in his life. Paul persecuted Christians for quite some time. Paul stayed a faithful Jew, being a part of the Jewish faith and refusing to turn to Christ for a period of time. But it didn't make any difference when he started the race. It didn't matter if he started as early as Peter did, or as early as some of the other apostles did. What mattered is he finished it. And that's the same with us. If we start the race when we're young, if we start the race when we're middle age, or if we start the race when we're older, wherever it is that we begin, all that matters is that we finish once we start. And if we've been running a while and maybe we've quit running the race, what matters is we start again and we keep going until we finish it. We get to the end. Paul was confident that he had finished it. And that's the confidence that we need to try to find also, that we have finished the race that we have been running. So as he was running, and as he had gotten to the end, he says that he had kept the faith. And because he had kept the faith, as a result of his faith, verse 8 tells us that his reward was certain, and he was confident that his reward was certain. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Now he's going to receive what he says, what he calls, is a crown. Now, there's two words for crown in the New Testament. One of them is diadem. A diadem is a crown that a king would wear. Like, I'm going to crown you king. That's not the kind of crown that Paul's talking about being granted someday. He would receive a stephanos. That's what he is talking about when he says crown. That's the Greek word that's translated crown, the word stephanos, which is a wreath that an athlete would wear. Instead of receiving the gold medal or silver medal or whatever, they would receive a wreath that would be placed on their head. And it was formed into a crown and put onto their head, which was their reward for winning the race. And in New Testament times, it was a garland of oak leaves or ivy that was twisted into a crown and placed onto the head of the one who won the race. This is the kind of crown that Paul is talking about. And this kind of crown is an incorruptible crown. It's not a physical one. It's not one made out of ivy or out of leaves, out of garland or oak, a garland of oak leaves or ivy. That's not what it is. It is an incorruptible crown. James chapter 1 and verse 12. A couple of passages I want us to notice. James 1 and verse 12 says, "Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him." Now that's part of the fight that we're in, the good fight that we're fighting, and the race that we're running, where we have the temptation that we are having to endure. And as we endure this temptation and we get through all of that, then we can receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Revelation 2 and verse 10 is another one which we use often to show that Christians must remain faithful, can't give up and quit, that we can't just be baptized and quit, that we have to remain faithful. Revelation 2 and verse 10 is where Jesus is writing to the church of Smyrna and says, "Do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. He says, be faithful until death. What are they going to receive? If you're faithful until death, I will give you the crown of life." So it's the same idea of a crown, the reward that will be given, the crown of life. And this is certainly a crown that cannot be earned, and we understand that it's by grace you have been saved through faith, not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Ephesians 2, 8 through 9 tells us. And Paul certainly understood that, as 1 Timothy 1 tells us, he knew that he was the chief of sinners, as he describes himself there as. And he hadn't earned this crown, and he never would do anything to earn this crown. So he knew he was going to receive it by the grace of God. But he knew that he had run in such a way to obtain it, that he would receive the crown by the grace of God, but he had done what was necessary to receive it. He had run the race, and he had finished the race, and he had kept the faith, and he hadn't given up. and therefore his reward was certain. This is a crown that would be given by a righteous judge. Now, we have a couple of examples of judges that were not righteous. For example, remember Ananias in Acts 23 and verse 2? When Paul was standing before Ananias, it says, "And the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth." That's not a righteous judge. That's a wicked judge. Or, remember Felix in Acts 24 and verse 27? We're told that Felix, because he wanted to do the Jews a favor, and it says, "Felix, wanting to do the Jews a favor, left Paul bound." Instead of releasing him, understanding that he hadn't done anything wrong, left him bound. That is not a righteous judge. Neither one of those two are righteous judges. But God is not only a righteous judge, God is a perfect judge. God doesn't make any mistakes. So when God decides that he's going to reward Paul with a crown of righteousness, an incorruptible crown, God didn't make a mistake in that. Yeah, Paul persecuted Christians. Yeah, Paul had Christians put to death. Yeah, Paul had a past. He did terrible things in his past. But Paul had changed. He had been converted. He was a Christian. He was pressing toward the goal. He was teaching. He was writing letters. He was enduring persecution. He didn't quit. When Demas gave up and went back to the world, Paul was in the prison cell, in the dungeon. When the others forsook him, Paul was left there being faithful. Paul knew that God, the righteous judge, had forgiven him and would, through his grace and mercy, give him the crown of righteousness. And yet, he says, makes it clear that this crown is not just for him. The crown is for anyone and everyone who will take it. It's offered to us. What are we going to do with it? The reward will be given to more than one person. Now, I'm thankful that I don't have to compete against Paul for the prize of the crown, because I wouldn't win that. Paul traveled the world teaching, suffered and suffered and suffered for being a Christian, eventually became a martyr as a Christian, but I don't have to compete against him. I have to do what I can do, and I have to be willing to work the way that I can work in the kingdom so that I can also receive that crown of righteousness. And when all of us work and all of us strive for that goal, we can all receive it. But here's the key. We're running the race. And all of us, none of us can say that we have finished the race, because we haven't finished it. We're still here. We're still living. We're still breathing. We're still running. Run diligently. Don't stop running. Run with all that you have to get there and receive the prize. 1 Corinthians 9:24 says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it." But again, all of us can obtain it. So what are we going to do? How are we going to run? Now, the point of all this is that Paul knew he would have to die, but he knew that he had lived a righteous life, and he would receive the crown of righteousness when he left his body. And I want us to be able to have the confidence that, knowing that our death is imminent also, and knowing that that it's just a departure. It's something that we're going to leave this world and we're going to go on someday to it. And those of our loved ones who are still here, they're going to be departing and going also. There's going to be a reunion someday of that. We're going to see our loved ones again who have passed before us. This isn't the end whenever we leave this earth. This is the beginning of our eternity when we leave here and go on. And when we think of death that way, it is a departure and moving on, as Paul did. And we run in the race in order to obtain the prize so that after we leave here, we will be rewarded and we will have the glory of heaven. Then we will learn from the example of Paul and be like him and have the same attitude that he did regarding death and regarding the departure of this life. I hope that we all have that confidence. And the way we can have that confidence is through our obedience to the gospel. If we do what's necessary to have our sins forgiven, we've decided that we want to obtain eternal life, so we've repented of our sins and we've confessed Christ and we've been baptized in water for the remission of our sins, then now we're Christians, we're in the race, we're running the race. And then at the end, as we live faithfully through our life, we don't quit, we don't give up, we live faithfully through our life, then we can say, I have run the race, that I've kept the faith. We can say that we have, as Paul did, that we have the crown of righteousness awaiting us. Let's make sure that we're right with the Lord and that we are running toward the prize. If you haven't yet become a child of God, we want you to do what's necessary to do that. If you're already a child of God and have sin in your life, we want you to repent of that. We want you to run faithfully again. And if we can assist you in that, won't you come while we stand and while we sing?